everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is Karen Holden. How are you today, Karen?
Hello, fine, thank you.
And for those listening, Karen is the founder of ACT Law Firm, having been admitted in the role in 2005. So she is here today to talk to us about her recent work, and we are very happy to have her on the podcast. So without further delay, let's just get into today's podcast, Karen. And my first question for you is, what inspired you to start up a law firm?
I was never one of these people that was actually going to run their own business. I was quite happy being a lawyer and an employee, but to be honest, over the years, I just became really disillusioned by the whole industry. It was money, money, money. Never really felt like they were investing in staff. Very long hours and a very hard culture. And to be honest, I just didn't know whether I had to give it all up and do something different. And stupidly, naively, bravely, I thought, how hard could it be to do it myself? So I set up on my own in a hope that I could develop the environment that I wanted, which was to offer clients a genuine, transparent service, a nice culture to work in, and really invest in the team. And pretty much it was kind of a moment for me where one of the ladies at work became pregnant, and it was as if she died to my boss, because even if she came back, she'd be useless in their mind. And although I wasn't pregnant or even planning a family at that time, I knew I wanted a family in the future. I thought, is that going to happen to me? So I kind of wanted a work-life balance. I wanted a family, but I also wanted a firm that I could have some integrity in. So I thought, well, let's try it on my own.
I see. And that is a very difficult thing to try and tackle when it comes to our work-life balance. And it leads into my next question. And I think that's something a lot of professionals have in one way clashed with it in one way or another. And that's, how have you actually managed to balance work and life in such a demanding sector?
I mean, obviously, when you set up a business, you put every hour of every day into it. And, you know, you can't deny that everyone has to do that. But, you know, things eventually slow down when you hire people and you progress. But I think the beauty of having a family and a social life is it really motivates you to work harder when you're at work, because then you can play harder and spend quality time with your family. You know what you're doing it for. And for me, actually being able to take a day out to go to my son's sports day, or to go off and have a weekend with him uninterrupted, I don't mind putting in the extra hours. So a lot of the time I'll spend time with him in the morning before school, make sure I get home to read him a story at night, have a glass of wine and a meal with my husband, but then quite happily work for another 3 hours on the laptop. I don't feel guilty at night because I spent time with them. I don't feel the pressure of the phone going at work. It's not for everybody working late at night, but for me, it means I can spend quality time with my family. I don't feel guilty, and I can still keep the business going. It's just a matter of deciding what's important to you and working your work around your life. I know that's easier said than done, but I am trying to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you raise a very good point there when it comes to splitting the two. And I think it was, if I recall correctly, there was a very recent study that came out, and it said that people who do have a family, who do have children and are looking to balance the things, actually end up being more productive at work because they have an inspiration and something that could really strive for beyond themselves.
And I think most mums wouldn't admit this probably on the radio, but will admit it to themselves. It's wonderful being with your little boy and girl, but as soon as you get on the train and you can actually have a cup of coffee and a bit of sanity, your brain reacts. And it's actually, I'm a human being again, I'm an adult.
Yes.
And it's actually, you really enjoy your time at work then, because you're using your brain, communicating with adults before you go back and play Lego again on the floor.
Yes, absolutely. And as we were on the topic of different sectors, I would like to focus on your one and a bit about the work in there. And what do you think are the most common legal issues when startup businesses and entrepreneurs clash as they try to take off, and how can they prevent them in your experience?
Yeah, it's interesting. In London at the moment, startup businesses tended to have a 3-year lead in. Now you could be up and running in 6 months and scaling up really quickly. So things are evolving very, very quickly. But I think the main things that capture even established businesses, not just startup, is cash flow. Obviously, understanding your expenses, your income in and out, making sure you monitor your debt recovery systems and people paying you on time, not overextending credit. a lot of people don't keep their legal documents up to date, or they use templates off the internet, because I appreciate legal costs are expensive when you first start out in your mind. But obviously that comes back to bite you in a few years if you have a dispute with a customer or a supplier. And it's those documents that really need to be sound. And if you're going to go for funding or investment, they're going to review those documents. So they need to be correct, bespoke, up to date. And one of the key things that a lot of investors and funders and businesses need is a good shareholders agreement. You need to know that you and your business partners are on the same hinge sheet. You know where you're going. You know how you're going to get there. You know how you're going to resolve a dispute. That breaks up companies time and time again because they haven't really had those hard, difficult conversations and documented it. That's something that we do sadly see a lot of. Employment contracts, people, when they start out, they're running very fast and sometimes forget to actually dot every I and cross every T. But your employees are not only of an asset to you and you want to obviously give them benefits and look after them, but they also hold all your confidential information and the running of the business. And if they go away disgruntled and you haven't got restrictive covenants or confidentiality agreement, they could set up in competition using your clients and suppliers. So, you know, you really have to protect your business against the people within as well as looking after the people within. And we also find that a lot of people don't fully understand their funding and investment options and run very quickly to somebody that's found them. And often they could lose the business or give away too much control. I think it's really important they understand what's out there for them, what the risks and benefits are, and that they make an informed decision about what they want, rather than allowing an investor or a bank to choose them. And one thing that I have said to clients in the past is don't run before you can walk. There's all this fantastic glamour about taking a £2 million contract with a large institute. But if in 6 months' time you can't deliver because something goes wrong, how are you going to fund all of the expenses to get to that end of the contract? Have you got a contingency plan? Because that client's not going to pay you more money. They're not going to pay you till you deliver it. And I have seen that close businesses down. So you kind of have to walk and organically get on top of things, have a good infrastructure and then run. They're probably the main things that I see.
Yes, and you've raised some fantastic points there. And actually, as you were talking, something that really did come up to my mind is this idea of sort of startup businesses and entrepreneurs and being, you know, very sort of up and coming and taking the initiative. But what I often see is this idea of, you know, how you can just go ahead and do it, and a lot of people sort of forget about the risks and things they should consider. Do you think that perhaps sort of the buzz and so much talk around it can sometimes perhaps hide the difficulties when it comes to establishing a business?
I mean, we've all watched Dragon's Den on TV. Yes. and you know, seen the hype around it and the excitement. But, you know, actually running a business is completely different to anyone's mindset. When I set up, I totally took for granted that I was going to be answering the phone. I no longer had an IT company, for example, to fix the printers. Those basic practical things are not considered when you start up, and that can actually cripple you. Because when you're out there trying to make money, all of a sudden you're trying to be everything to everybody. And you don't really understand what's going to come your way. So there is a lot of hype and a lot of buzz. And I think a lot of people think it's easier than it is. But obviously, once you're in it, if you've got really good advisors on board and they go on a journey with you, then you've got more chance of success. But it's finding people to mentor you, the trust. And I think a lot more people should take a considered view, talk to more people and really do more research before they take the plunge.
Absolutely. And actually, I would like to lead on a question that you yourself have said that you have been asked quite a lot recently about, and that's about franchising one's business. And the idea of a franchise seems very appealing to a lot of businesses and entrepreneurs, but what are the legal factors to consider when trying to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is, can you actually replicate your business? So if somebody's buying into you, you can't be over 22 branches. So you need to have a business that can actually be replicated. You also need to make sure that you have the IP, that you own it, and that it's all been protected, so that you're allowing them to use your name and your logo, and that you've got complete protection over that. And then that's the also consideration, is how do you make sure that your reputation is looked after? There's nothing worse than you franchise your business and they completely destroy all the goodwill that you've built up. So that comes with obviously training the people involved, interviewing the people involved to make sure that they genuinely are in synergy with you. and then documenting that. So make sure they've got training manuals, the policies, the employment contracts, the operational manuals, to make sure they actually operate that business in line with how you've set it up and how you want the public to perceive you, to protect your IP, to protect your goodwill. You really just need to speak to a franchisee almost as if you're going into partnership with them. I know you're technically not, but you don't want to do business with somebody and allow them to run with your business if you don't like them, you don't trust them, they don't understand your concept. You really have to interview them and really trust that they will look after your name. And other things you've got to look at is, what if they are underperforming and they're not doing what you want? How do you get out of it? Have you got solid agreements to deal with that termination? And what if they die? What if they're sick for a long period of time? You've really got to think for the future how you're going to manage those relationships. And, you know, a franchise agreement is the key document. But you've got to, both of you, agree everything, understand everything, and make sure that you're both aligned for the future together. You know, and you have to monitor it. I mean, the problem is you can go and franchise 20, 30 companies and you can have them all the money coming in. You've got to constantly check their performance, check their cash flow, check that their staff are happy, check that your goodwill is still earning credibility out there. Monitoring is probably the most difficult part after you've done that. So you have a really tight franchise agreement, but then monitor it. And I guess commercial property is a big issue now, because do they take a lease? Do they buy a freehold? Who owns it, you or them? What if you're going to get rid of them? Who takes the property on? And especially in London at the moment, you know, property prices are hugely expensive. What happens if their lease comes up to renewal and they can't afford it? All of these long-term issues need to be addressed now and thought about now. And it's very difficult because you don't know what the future holds and you've kind of got to get your crystal ball out. But the more you discuss now and document in documents, the better the longevity of your franchise is.
Yes, I absolutely agreed on that point. And leading on, something that you said which was really interesting to me, and that was the idea of keeping your employees and the people that you're involved with happy when it comes to whether it's goodwill or just their well-being. How important do you think that is in the grand scheme of things?
Employees are the most essential asset in any business. They're what the public see, your customers see. It's what you have to come in every day to work with. So if they're disgruntled and unhappy, that's the image they're giving out there. I very much take the view that we're a team here. So if parents need to have flexible working for looking after the parents, you have to offer that them, or else you're not going to have a satisfactory team. Then you've got to look at the single young people that want to go out on holiday. Why should they work longer hours than the parents? You've got to give consistent flexibility and benefits across the board. The more you give them and the more autonomy therefore they have, actually the more they give back. And I just don't think enough people understand that recruiting and training staff costs lots of money. Nurturing a culture and creating a team, that loyalty commitment, you'll get tenfold back. And I just don't understand why the larger businesses don't invest in their employees as much as they do.
Yeah, it is it is an absolutely spot on observation there. And to kind of wrap off everything that we've talked about, you've given us a lot of great insight on the topics. But can you perhaps give first time business owners a tip or two that you think will do them very good service for a smooth legal sailing?
I think the first thing is, from a personal point of view, you are going to make a mistake. You are human and you will always make mistakes when you're running a business. And in fact, if you're not, then you're not being innovative enough. So I think it's be prepared you'll make mistakes. It's about the ability to get up, dust off, learn from them and move forward. So just don't be afraid of that. And I made plenty when I set up. I've learned from them and I'm hoping that my clients can learn from me on that. I've already touched on it before, but don't run before you can walk. Don't jump into the large investment pools or the large contracts unless you have a contingency plan, an exit plan, you fully understand everything you're getting into, that you can actually service those contracts or you can actually give the investors what they're looking for. That will cripple your business very quickly if you haven't had a realistic view on things. And although this sounds salesy and I don't mean it to be, get good advisors on board really early. A good accountant and a lawyer will save you so much money ultimately. If the documents are correct, you're less likely to be sued or come stuck. The structure of the company could be more tax efficient with a good accountant. but they must be right for you as well. So they must understand you and your business. They must understand that you're running the business and you're going to make the commercial decisions, and they're only there to support you. But they're probably the three top tips I'd give.
Great, perfect. And the last question I would like to ask you is the one I ask everyone that comes on a podcast, and that is, what are you currently reading?
Okay, honestly, as an adult, I don't read very much because I don't have enough time. But genuinely, every night I'm having to read the BFG or Matilda or the Charlotte Chocolate Factory. That is my life at the moment. I have to read at least two chapters every night or I'm in trouble.
Is there one perhaps that is a fan favourite in that case?
Absolutely loved Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, so I'll be going to the theatre and the movies on that, I think, soon.
Great, brilliant. And with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today, Karen.
Thank you very much for your time.
And of course, for our listeners, if you would like to know more about CT Law Firm, Karen, and the work that you do over there, all relevant links will be in the description below, where you can go and you can find out more about their work. And all social media profiles as well. We thank you very much for having joined us on another episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio, and we will look forward to seeing you next week.